broadcasting around the world on International Shortwave and on the Radio Disclosure Radio Network. I'm Matt Aaron, your host tonight, and listen. One of the things that's been common in the news is UFOs. The government's going to suppose information. They're going to talk about things. They're going to... I'm telling you, the government... Yeah, the word... Yeah, I don't want to use the term lying, but anyways. My guest tonight is going to talk to us about his news service and what's been going on and what... I'm going to let him kind of lead this. He's the guy, I think, to kind of talk to us. He joins us from Toronto, Canada. Victor, how are you this evening? And you run this news service called Z-Land Communications. And for my audience that doesn't know what that is, can you give a brief description and talk about how long you've been doing this? Because in your bio, it's impressive.
Well, yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot, Matt, for having me. It's really great to be with you. It sounds like there's going to be a good broad discussion tonight, so I'm really enthusiastic about that. Yeah, with respect to, first of all, how I got involved in all of this, I've been involved in this, Matt, for approximately 40, going on 45 years now. First read a book by Jacques Vallée way back in 1975. I was up north at our cottage, and I was just browsing in a bookstore and picked up his book, Jacques Vallée's book, Revelations, and stood there and read it, the back cover and the inside cover, and said, this sounds fascinating. And I really did not have any particular interest or knowledge about the UFO phenomenon back then, that I thought anyways, and I brought it back to the cottage, and I read the book once, and I said, my goodness, there's just too much in here for me to digest. And by the end of the summer, I'd read the book fully three times, and it's not a large tome or anything like that, but it intrigued me so much that I had to, in order to digest it, I really had to page by page and do my little check marks and underlining. And from that, I realized there was something really going on with this phenomenon, something very, very serious and very, very strange. And from that, I became involved in different organizations up here in Canada, in Toronto, MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. And with that, I began to get into, you know, sighting reports and so on, you know, going out and looking at sighting reports of where they might have landed or what they looked like in the sky and talking to people. But then eventually, and this is the Reader's Digest version, eventually I got to realize that it really, this whole thing wasn't about lights in the sky. It was about the lies on the ground and how our government has been keeping this information from us for well over 70 years. And the more I delved into this and became associated with different organizations, the more I realized that I had to go on a mission to somehow at least expose what was going on, along with a lot of the other UFO researchers that I came into contact with. So with that, I became involved in a radio program called Strange Days Indeed. And I know some of the people in your part of the woods will probably recognize that with UFO updates. The leader of that particular program was Errol Bruce Knapp. And I did that program on one of our radio stations up here in Toronto called CFRB. And I came into contact with just about every single individual of any kind of nomenclature or description or importance with respect to this issue. I'm talking about, you know, the Stephen Bassetts, the Richard Dolan, John Mack, Leslie Kane, all of those people who've become almost icons in this. I became involved with that, you know, well over 30 years ago. So it's been quite a journey in trying to come to grips with the geopolitical implications of what's going on and not just lights in the sky. And basically, that's what Z-Land Communications does. Z-Land Communications is a Canadian news agency, news service, I should say, that covers the geopolitical implications of an extraterrestrial presence as manifested by the UFO phenomenon. And there's just all kinds of information that can be put out, but I try to be selective in what I do, and I try to deal with factual matters that have relevance to what's going on today in our world with respect to the geopolitics and the social implications of what's going on. And it's a very, very deep pool, and once you sort of dip your big toe in, you eventually become totally and completely immersed in this by a couple of factors. first of all, the information itself is worthy to get out to the public because they know so little about this. Most people are very concerned about putting bread on their table and, you know, paying their mortgage. And many people ask me, why is this important? And that's one of the jobs that Zealand Communication attempts to do, is get the information out and indicate why the UFO phenomenon and the extraterrestrial presence that's engaging the planet is so very crucial to the human family, and why eventually we are going to have to adapt to that reality, and what kind of sociological underpinnings or processes are we going to have to put in place to, first of all, understand what's really going on, and then to accept the fact that we are in fact being engaged by off-world civilizations. And for someone who doesn't have any background in that sort of phenomenon at all, it's a very big pill to swallow, and I can accept that. I've run into a lot of groups in the lectures that I do, and I've lectured all over North America, in Australia, and helping people to understand that this is a phenomenon that we have to recognize as important and recognize as real. So that's what Zealand Communications does, and we do it on a regular basis, and people want to go to our website. All they have to do is Google Zealand Communications, that's Z-L-A-N-D, and Communications, and they'll come up with our site.
So I'm going to put the link to your website on our website at radiodisclosure.com.
Sure.
And Victor, one of the things that a lot of people question about a news agency that is reporting the weird, the strange, the paranormal, is integrity. And one of a close friend of mine that's in this says that you would not run a certain story, and I don't know if the story that was told to me by this other individual, and I'm not going to say who it was, say that you wouldn't run the story because you felt like there was an integrity problem with the story, even though that there was holes and Swiss cheese in it. But that's what I was told. I don't know if you even know what I'm even discussing or even talking about, but apparently integrity is a big thing for you.
Yeah, it really is. There's a fine line there, Matt. You have to be tactful and diplomatic as to how you put this stuff forward. It's a double-edged sword. It's very easy to go down a rabbit hole of a story and eventually find out that it's got holes in it. And then at that point, if it does have holes in it, you have to make a decision. Do you make this thing public and let the public decide what's going on, put all as many facts as you can possibly put out, and let the public decide about what this story is. Now, there's a lot of tentacles to that point of view. Or do you just eliminate the story and say, no, this is just a non sequitur, it's a non-starter, and I'm not even going to deal with it. I do that on a regular basis because I get a lot of information from a lot of people. You know, what do aliens look like, and, where do they come from, and how many sightings do you have on your books and all of that, what are the implications of the ancient alien theory? All of those things. You have to really digest things very, very carefully in order to put it out there so that it comes out in a credible as a credible commodity, so that people can really distill what the facts are and make their own decisions about it. And there's a lot of issues. The big issue right now is what's going on in Washington, and we can talk about that a little bit later on. But there's a lot of other things that come out that, if they point to, as far as I'm concerned, a couple of things. The number one thing that we have to consider is we as a human family, and what I call HEB, human extinction behaviors. If the story relates to what human extinction behaviors are or could be or how they would be affected, then I kind of run with it. If it really doesn't, then I kind of push it aside, or at least I frame it in a different way. So these human extinction behaviors have to be understood with respect to who we are as a human family and what the geopolitical and sociological implications are of how we internalize, and we're almost killing ourselves with these extinction behaviors. So it's all a very, very complex web that calls into play naming the integrity of the issue. And you have to really describe it very carefully. And if you don't do that, then you can be very easily criticized. And I don't mind that. I don't mind being criticized. But if you don't have a good factual basis for what you're talking about, then you, your integrity goes up in smoke.
Well, when we come back from the break, let's talk about the geopolitical issues in Washington with the news story going on right now. 1-833-880-9899. 1-833-880-9899. This is Radio Disclosure. Turmoil in Washington over whether or not if UFOs exist or not. Is that the actual news story? Us as a race, as a human family. That's the discussion we're having here. Victor from Z-Lan Communications joins us from Ontario, Canada. And I don't even know where to start on this. This is a... You're the expert in what's going on in Washington at this point with this, in my personal opinion. Where do you want to go with this?
Well, I think it's probably important to, you mentioned before the break, the geopolitical implications. I think it's a good place to start, because the geopolitical implications of what's going on have really come to a head, and they came to a head back in December of 2017 with a blockbuster story written by Leslie Kane, Ralph Blumenthal, and Helen Cooper in the New York Times. And they illuminated the idea behind the Pentagon release of videos and the U.S. Navy pilots who captured the videos and the Tic Tac videos, as some people refer to them as. They released that information, and then on top of that, and underpinning to it, they released the fact that the Senate Majority Leader, Senator Harry Reid, was somehow, and we've yet to figure out exactly what happened, somehow got $22 million allocated to a UFO investigation by the Pentagon back, and it ran from 2007 to 2012. And he got this money, $22 million allocated to the Pentagon, and they began their UFO investigation. And as far as we know, it was done in secret in the C-ring, in the bowels of the Pentagon. And that was run by and headed by a former intelligence officer, Luis Elizondo. And in my discussions with Luis Elizondo, he was very clear on what this particular operation did. They collected information for approximately 5 years, and it became very obvious to him that the data that they were collecting pointed to the fact that these UFOs were in fact real, and that they're being manifested in many, many different ways, not just, you know, in American airspace, but all over the planet on virtually a daily basis. And it sort of struck him that something needed to be done about this, and he wanted to do something a little bit more. And he began to butt heads with some of the head honchos at the Pentagon. And as a result, I'm not sure exactly what year he did resign, but he did resign around 2011 or 2012 from that particular organization because of the, I guess, the secrecy that he was forced to keep in place with respect to this information. So that article back in 2017 really started to, I guess, break the dam of the flow of information. And never before had any kind of journalist written an article with such specificity with respect to the UFO issue, especially in terms of what the Navy pilots were seeing, encountering in Catalina Island off the coast of California, flying along in their F-16s, being redirected to where these UFOs were, and encountering these things, and these Tic Tacs, as they were, you know, the shape of them were a Tic Tac form. They would see these things coming directly at them, and then zip up and go from 50 feet above the water to 85,000 feet in less than 1 second.
Wow.
Less than 1 second. And not only once, but twice. And in addition to that, as some of these other things, these other objects of unknown origin, were underwater, creating some sort of fomentation within the water, moving at up to 800 miles an hour in water, and then breaking through the surface and rising up and going up into the upper atmosphere in blank Mach speed.
Wow.
That they couldn't even come close to So these were videos that were released, and why the U.S. Pentagon released this information is yet to be discovered. I have a particular theory on that, but that's something that we could discuss later on. But the fact of the matter was that the U.S. Navy, because of what the pilots actually saw in this particular occasion and others outside off the coast of Florida, the U.S. Navy decided to change their policy with respect to how pilots were given permission to publicly account for or discuss sightings of UFOs. Before that, they were not allowed to mention this thing publicly. They would either be disciplined, in some way, or fired or whatever. But the U.S. Navy decided to change their policy. And that was a huge, a party starter for the U.S. Navy to allow these pilots to come forward. And as a result of that, in 2017 and moving forward, we've got a flow of information like never before, Matt. This last 70 years has been very difficult for the UFO research community, but within the last three or four, the dam has burst open and all this information is coming down. So that's the beginning part of what happened within Washington. So and then from that, we've got a very interesting situation with respect to Marco Rubio, a senator, a Republican senator. He and his Democratic counterpart, they're the chair and co-chairs of the National Intelligence Committee, the select committee in the Senate on intelligence. And what they do is they present information about intelligence, and they put forward what's called the Intelligence Authorization Act for each fiscal year. And this one is... this is something that's done every single year. It's passed. It allocates money to the military and the intelligence agencies with direction to do what they need to do with the money. However, they put in a curve here. Both Rubio and Mark Warner put in a section talking about UAP, unidentified aerial phenomenon. And what they did was request or direct the director of the National Intelligence Agency to gather all the data that they have on UAP and submit it to this committee. And that's never been done before. So we are extremely concerned and interested in the fact. And see, this is the kind of news that we deal with. This is big news within the UFO research community. And having this kind of data reporting to the select committee is going to be something of great interest. And on top of all of that, which is something of a big surprise too, several of the senators, including Marco Rubio and Mark Warner, were briefed by U.S. Navy officials on the UAP issue several months before this report came out, and they came out scratching their head. They had no idea what the U.S. Navy was going to tell them, and incredulously they came out wondering what has been going on and why didn't we know about this before. So all of the ducks are beginning to fall into a row here, Matt, and it's an extremely important point in time for the UFO research community to see all this information coming out the way it is. And we're hoping, and one of the things that most of us in the UFO research community want to hope for, is that this information is coming forward, being directed to the intelligence agency in the Senate, will result in some kind of hearings. Now, we're hoping for that. Whether that happens or not, we're not quite sure, because some of the information may be classified. Some of it would be able to be declassified. We're not sure. But we hope that they can bring forward military witnesses, former military people, other researchers, journalists perhaps, to give evidence at hearings with respect to the UAP issue and really kind of open this thing up to the public, so that my contention is there are people, and this is a theory on my part, Matt, a lot of us feel that there are people within the Pentagon that want this information out in some form or another, because the pressure is building. The information is too deep, too wide, and too intense to keep it undercover for another 70 years. So they're going to have to figure out a way to disclose certain aspects of this phenomenon to the general public in a palatable way that everybody will be able to understand and maybe comprehend without, going home and jumping out their basement window. So it's a very complex matrix of information and activity that's going on.
So I gotta step back for a second. I mean, let's examine something here.
Right. Go ahead.
Donald Trump gives an order for them to release everything that they have. This is the president of the United States, and he gives an executive order, correct me if I'm wrong on this, that says that they need to release all this information. They make a section called Space Force, and people are laughing at it. You have people doing research and all of this, trying to come up with all the documentation. To me, it sounds like they're prepping the general public almost indirectly for something big, for something that is more than just, hey, aliens exist. I mean, 2020 was a crazy year, but I mean, it wouldn't surprise me coming up here shortly if, you know, you're not seeing a craft parked on the White House lawn. I don't know. The more that I go through this and I think about it, there's so many people who laugh at the UFO phenomenon. They laugh at aliens and people talking about alien abductions. But what's creepy is the more that you study these alien abductions and the different things that come with those, they're very, very similar. And I don't know. What do you want to hit up when we come back from the break?
Well, I think it would be important for your listeners to really gain a deeper understanding of the geopolitical and the sociological implications. And there are three separate parts to that. And I think it'd be good if we could spend some time in the three parts of how I see this whole idea of disclosure and what the geopolitical implications are of an ET presence. So we could get into those three aspects when we come back.
Sounds like a great plan. Z-Lan Communications, Mr. Victor is joining us. He's in Toronto, Canada. Toronto? Oh, dear. See? I can't remember names. That's terrible. I hope I got that right. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Radio Disclosure. We'll be back. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. Z-Lan Communications, Mr. Victor is joining us. He's going to talk about the geopolitical structure of what's going on in, I think, Washington and the world as far as this UFO phenomenon. 1-833-880-9899 if you want to join us. 1-833-880-9899. Victor, welcome back to the program.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Matt. I've enjoyed the conversation so far, and I'm sure that it'll get even more enjoyable as we go along here.
So, geopolitical. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about this, and you keep bringing up this term, geopolitical, mm-hmm. I'm going to pull your zip cord, because just a minute ago I did that, and you went. I go for it.
Yeah. Well, there's a Canadian philosopher. He wrote a book called The Canadian Context, and he said that the world's a very complex place, and you cannot describe everything that's going on the planet at one time. There's just too many things happening, so you have to take everything one at a time. We haven't reached that point in the complexity of our brain as a species to deal with everything that's going on. We have to take things one thing at a time. And it's the same with this issue. There's so many different complex parts to it. And when I say geopolitical, I'm talking the international implications of this. And I talk about it with respect to the planet itself and what is facing the human family right now at this point in time with respect to not only the conditions on our planet, but this whole thing about the engagement with these off-world civilizations. Why are they here? What's their agenda? And where's it all going? And if we want to really grasp what's really going on, we have to understand three separate things. First of all, the idea of technology and energy. What kind of information is coming through to us from the so-called extraterrestrial presence as manifested by UFOs? What is their technology? How did they get here? And what are the implications of that? And what kind of energy, in fact, are they using? They're not stopping off at Jupiter and filling up with SO gas. There's some kind of, yes, there's some kind of arcane fuel or energy source or propulsion systems that are propelling these vehicles. So that's the one thing. That's the energy factor. The other factor, as I mentioned earlier, in dealing with this whole issue, we have to look at what we are doing on the planet and what I call human extinction behaviors. What are the things that we are doing on our planet that are creating the kinds of situations where within a certain amount of time, if things keep on going the way they are, we are going to be extinct. And it's going to happen with respect to particularly the use of fossil fuels. If we keep on burning fossil fuels, we will extinct ourselves eventually. It may not be tomorrow or the next day, but it will eventually happen. If we do not come to some sort of understanding that fossil fuels will be destroying our atmosphere, they're going to destroy our lungs, they will create a defection of the permafrost, and in turn, as the permafrost melts, there's more methane going to be coming out of the ground, we are going to lose the polar caps, the water is going to creep into our continental shelves. All kinds of deleterious things are going to be happening as the result of fossil fuels. So that's one extinction behavior that we have to deal with. So that's sort of a physical thing with our environment. The other thing is the sociological things like economic disparity, poverty, racism. Those kinds of things are behaviors that, as you know, everyone can well understand right now, are dividing us. And as a human species, we've done a pretty darn good job of dividing ourselves into segments: black, white, yellow. You're this tall, you have that color skin. We differentiate things by religion. We show our differences more than our commonality. So those kinds of things are difficult for us to divest ourselves of. And we have to answer the question, when these extraterrestrials or these beings from off-world civilizations are manifesting themselves, we have to come to grips with the fact that if they are in fact as advanced as we think they are, if they can travel at or beyond the speed of light, they must have figured out a way to remain sustainable for over a million years, if not longer than us. So they're that far advanced. So they have in some way eliminated those human extinction behaviors. So they've done something to get those things out of the way. What are they? What did they do and how did they do it? So those human behaviors that we have to come to grips with them. And the other thing is this whole idea of a cyclical war economy. There are major wars going on every 10 or 15 years in one way or another. And that cyclical war economy is keeping us pretty busy with things that really are not relevant to us as a development, as a species. So an off-world civilization coming here has to think, my goodness, will these people find a way to fight each other literally every 10 or 15 years? Why is that going on? Once again, it'll become an extinction behavior.
So when you watch when you watch something like Stargate, and
right,
mm-hmm. Stargate, there's some people who theorize that there really is an actual Stargate where people mm-hmm. can travel to other planets. That's another discussion for another day. But when you're watching Stargate, and the world has its own problems, planet Earth has its own problems, just as you're describing, but they're going to other planets, and they're trying to tell these planets, you need to quit fighting. You got, this massive alien race going to come. And they're like, oh, we can't tell our general public that the alien race is coming, but we're going to continue our war with the other country. And they got the two countries sitting there side by side. It mm-hmm. it puts a different spin on things as you think about the whole thing. Our petty wars over mm-hmm. oil, our petty wars over political power, All of that in the larger scheme of things just becomes very minute. And I'm really wondering how an alien race that is advanced enough to be able to fly a spaceship or a craft or move it in the way that they are, how they are viewing, because there's a different level of intelligence that's there. And then I also ask the question, the alien abduction stories that you hear where people are being taken and they're being experimented on and then returned, if they have that much advanced technology, why are they needing to come and study the human race in the fashion that they are?
I do so many interviews on that question, Matt. And I might say, if I could make a comment about the abduction phenomenon, I'm not sure if your listeners or if you are aware of Dr. John Mack, one of the foremost researchers. He was the head of psychiatric investigation at Harvard University. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to John Mack several times, both in interviews and informally. I visited his office in 1996. So he had a lot to say about that, because I had had interactions with several contactees, people who had in fact been abducted. And I was dealing with 12 of them at a time, two of them children. And he shared some information with me that kind of broaden the whole perspective and the context of that whole issue of why they're interested in us. And one of the issues that he raised was, okay, fine, they do seem to show an interest, as told by the experiencers or contactees, whatever you want to call them, they do show an interest in us. However, he postulated or asked the question, how many other Earth-like planets are out there in a similar situation to us, and have they been there? And have they assisted them or done things to their civilization that have had some sort of positive effect or negative effect? So the Earth not being the only one of this kind of civilizations that almost Neanderthal to them. So there has to be an idea behind the multiplicity of these races, not just one. There's a multitude of races that are being engaged with us. And they must have at some time done this with other planets. And most of the time, the people that have been taken and given information, and some of them have been experimented upon, but eventually they come to realize that there's something, the word positive really doesn't describe it, but there's a connection that's made between the abductee and the ET races. And eventually they come to the understanding, the humans do, that they're doing this for a reason, a particular reason. To help us understand what's really going on, not just on Earth, but in the cosmos. And many of the abductees have shared some incredible things with us with respect to why these beings are here, and as a signal to us that we are really screwing up our environment and really doing things to our planet that are so deleterious, and that it's up to us to fix these things, to do something about it. And that's why many people in the research community feel that the extraterrestrials, they're not going to come down here and land on the White House lawn and fix everything for us. It's up to us to really get our act together. And once we at least begin to see the realization of that fact and do something positive, the chances of contact will increase dramatically, because the human family will see that these interactions are positive. There's something very enlightening about who these people are, and that they do have a message for us. They have no interest. This is what the contactees say. They have no interest at all in coming down here and having us for breakfast. And if they did have that interest or destroy us, they would have done it long ago.
Indeed.
Because it's almost comedic to suggest that they are going to take over the planet, or that there's some big plan in an insidious way to take over the Earth. It's just not something that these contactees say and repeat time after time. Their story is the ETs are here for a specific reason, and somehow these people have been chosen to bring the message forward to us. So that's one of the reasons why I think that the contactee experience is extremely important a lot of these contactees.
Hold on just a second, Victor. We're going to run to a quick break, and when we do, we're going to continue on this line of discussion. This is Radio Disclosure. Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. Got Victor from Z-Land Communications. His web address is on radiodisclosure.com. Go up there, take a look at his news. He's got a ton of stuff up there. And this last segment has kind of left my head spinning just a little bit. 1-833-880-9899. 1-833-880-9899 if you want to join us. And Victor has been discussing basically the whole concept that us as a human race is not ready for contact yet, and we're being contacted by multiple alien races. And there's been a common theme to the abduction stories, and basically that we're destroying ourselves. And what did you called it, human extinction behavior? Is that how you coined the phrase?
That's right, yeah. Behaviors that will eventually lead us to extinction as a human family, yeah. That's where we're headed.
So you were talking about the commonality of all of these abduction stories.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you want me to?
Yeah, go ahead. So that,
well, there's if someone wants to really get into an understanding of what's going on with respect to the UFO ET phenomenon, the abduction phenomenon is a great place to start. As much reading as you can do, and I suggest books by David Jacobs. It's not a pleasant read, but it's a good read. Dr. John Mack, he's written three books on it. Books by Kathleen Marden. If anybody wants to pick up any one of those books from any one of those authors, I really suggest that they do to grab a better insight and overall context and perspective of what the abduction phenomenon is all about. But there's one thing that I do want to say about the abduction phenomenon with respect to I guess another one of the extinction behaviors that this is a pet peeve of mine with respect to the killing the unborn with the abortion issue. And one of the most significant and divisive social issues of our day today. And what seems to be happening with the abduction abductees is that I'll try to tell the story as a generic series of events. What seems to be happening, Matt, is that women, men and women are abducted, okay? They're taken, and they're taken multiple times, but specifically, some women are, in fact, abducted again and again. Now, what happens is that they are taken upon a ship, and somehow these women are impregnated. They're impregnated with either an embryo of some kind or whatever, and they're sent back. And they don't know it. They don't really recall it. But what happens is that the women kind of recollect something did happen, and they just go along with their lives and realizing that something maybe bizarre did happen. But they go through, 1 month and miss their menstrual period, and another month they miss another menstrual period. And by the third month missing a menstrual period, they go to the doctor and they say, listen, I haven't had my menstrual period for three months now. Doctor examines the woman, and the doctor says, well, that's easy to understand. You're pregnant. And the woman would say, pregnant? I haven't had sex with anyone. I'm not married. Or one other factor where they had no intercourse with a male. So how can I be pregnant? Well, the doctor would say, well, sweetheart, you're pregnant. And to her surprise, that scenario finishes, and she goes along with being pregnant for a period of time, and then is taken again. And the abductors remove the fetus from the woman, and this results in the idea of the hybrid birth program.
Oh my gosh.
And the woman is taken back, sent back to her home, and then without any kind of recollection of what went on, although it may be disturbing, she could have recollected something, but she goes back to the doctor, and the doctor says, "Well, how are you doing? Fine." Examines her, and she's no longer pregnant.
How many
this
stories
scenario is common?
How many stories are like this?
Well, I know Dr. John Mack in his book. I'm going to pick a number here. I know that he did interview six specific women who recounted this, and they were not the only six that are reported to have done this. I have actually met two of them myself, where one of them as a teenager was taken as an 18-year-old, didn't really realize what was going on. She was in just the latter part of high school at the time, and she didn't feel well, had a few problems, went to the doctor, and exactly the same thing happened. She was diagnosed as being pregnant, had no idea. She's a teenager. She didn't have any kind of sexual intercourse with anyone, and she went through the same situation. She was became unpregnant, not pregnant anymore after the first trimester, and so this is a very very common situation that's happened. A lot of women have gone through this, and so the reason that I'm bringing it up is because the technology behind how and what these extraterrestrials are doing with these women really speaks to the fact that we here on the planet choose to, if a woman, if there is an unwanted pregnancy, the first thing they do is abort the fetus. And my particular contention on that one is that the technology that's involved as the extraterrestrials remove safely, they safely remove the fetus from the woman and take it out of the womb and put it in some sort of incubation situation. Oh, that, in effect, if these, and get this one, if in fact the extraterrestrials choose to contact us and share some of the technologies, the energy technologies, the propulsion systems, and whatever, it would be incumbent upon them to share the technology as to how we remove safely a fetus from an unwanted pregnancy. And that would, in fact, end the issue of abortion. So this is one of the staggering, and absolutely staggering implication of what's going on with respect to extraterrestrial contact, if that particular medical technology could be shared with humanity. Think of the changes that would come about as a result of the fact that if this technology was shared with our medical professionals, we could eliminate any kind of tension or the issue with respect to abortion immediately. It would protect women's rights, the rights of the child. It would be a win-win situation for everyone. And that's what these contactees are going through, Matt. And I have no doubt that it's true. When the women sit in front of me and they're in tears, and Dr. John Mack said exactly the same thing, you can bet that these women went through something very, very disturbing. So that's one of the sociological implications. It's not necessarily a geopolitical one, although, you know, abortion globally is a geopolitical issue.
I couldn't imagine being a female that's never engaged in the act of sexual intercourse, mm-hmm. or lovemaking, right. or anything, and finding out you're pregnant, and then realizing, well, did they know that they were an abductee at that point?
Well, the Dr. John Mack would put them through a series of hypnotic regressions, and the hypnotic regressions would reveal that the scenario would be, and Bud Hopkins also did this. If people are also interested in reading the book Intruders by Bud Hopkins, he goes through this with one particular woman who went through a series of these situations. The scenario is, woman is asleep in her bed at night. Beings enter the room somehow through the walls. They don't, you know, knock on the door and come in and say hello. They come right through the walls. They are literally they dissect their atoms and come right through solid walls. Gather around the bed. Usually there's three of them. They lift the woman up somehow in an antigravitic way. Bring her through the wall herself. Okay, please stay with me on this, okay? bring her to the ship and take her up into the ship, perform whatever examination. Sometimes it's just a physical examination of some kind. Other times it's an impregnation operation. They impregnate the woman, bring her back through the wall and put her back in bed. A lot of times the women report that they wake up in the morning and their feet are on their pillow and their head is at the foot of the bed. Their nightgowns are on inside out, and sometimes there is a discharge on their bed, and the woman just thinks, oh my goodness, I must have been, who knows what happened during the night. So she has no answers to what goes on, and then life goes on from there. They reconcile the situation with respect to, my God, I'm just a bad dream. And then after that, then the whole impregnation scenario unfolds with being brought back and having the fetus removed.
I can't imagine being a woman and realizing that you just got pregnant and you don't know how it happened, and then the pregnancy is just gone. That's so much information so quick. We want to say thank you to Victor Zeeland Communications. His website is on our website, or you can Google it and also find it. And we definitely say thank you for joining us tonight. And we're going to have you back. I'm going to see how all this new stuff unfolds. Want to say thank you to WTWW for carrying us and all of our other local affiliates. This has been Radio Disclosure.